We are holding on Zion Amadei.
Bay's four lines from the bottom. We started a discussion, well, we got into this discussion as follows. We mentioned a din that Nochum Amadi said in connection with our halachos over here about business with goyim before their chagas. We said not only the chachamim didn't hold with him, but they said, Nishtaka adobo v'lo nema, such a thing should never be said, nobody ever said such a thing before, etc. And we said a number of other such halachos that he said also where the chachamim had the same reaction. So that brought us to ask, so what is it? Poor guy, every time they're putting him down like that? Yeah, what are they, biased against people from Madai? What's that? So we said, after all, we do have one thing where the halacha is like him, that you're allowed to ask for your personal needs in the Bracha Shemei Tefila. But we said, that doesn't really tell us anything, because there you have, that's not his own thing. That's the Chachamim, which we were in the middle of the Brice sort of discussing. We said, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua disagree. What order should a person daven in? Should you first, Rabbi Eliezer says, first you ask for the things you need. After that, you daven. Shemana Esrei.
Right?
And he brought a pasuk to that. And he brought a pasuk to that effect. Rabbi Yeshua says, first you daven. Shemana Esrei. Right? Then you ask for your needs, or first you, not necessarily the whole Shemana Esrei, but first you daven at least the first part of Shemana Esrei. In other words, where you express the greatness of Hashem, and then you ask for your needs.
Within
Shemana Esrei itself. But, well, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua maybe is talking within Shemana Esrei. Rabbi Eliezer, we're going to see soon. The fact is, I mean, Shemana Esrei is structured the way Rabbi Yeshua is saying, that first you praise Hashem and then you ask for your need. We'll see soon why Rabbi Eliezer will agree that Shemana Esrei is different. But he's talking about other times when you're davening. If you have needs that are not specifically in Shemana Esrei, where should you daven for them? Before Shemana Esrei? Different things. I mean, like this, we said you can ask for anything in Shemei Tefillah, but Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua apparently disagree with that concept. They're saying that you can't just ask for anything in Shemei Tefillah. So if you have things that are not covered under any of the other 12 middle brachos of Shemei Esrei, and you need to ask for them, then you should first, Rabbi Eliezer says, daven for them first, then daven Shemei Esrei, and Rabbi Yeshua says the other way around. And we quoted Pesukim on both sides of it. But each one has, obviously, Pesukim, neither of them can disagree with Pesukim, so we said each one has a way of explaining the other one's pasuk so that it fits with his opinion as well. I started mentioning at the very end yesterday an idea that the Rashba says why we say the three brachas of Shemana Esrei first, Ovis, Gvuras, and Kedushas Hashem, because when you're asking somebody for something, you first have to figure out, are you asking for something you deserve, something you're entitled to, or something that's a favor? Well, that's the first bracha we say, that everything we get from Hashem is a favor, even that he gives to the Ovis is a favor, how much more so that he gives to us in our tchot, in their tchot.
The fact that he won't ask you directly.
There's that too. Hello. So that's the first bracha. The second bracha is the next thing when you're asking somebody for something is, does he have the power to do it? So we say, yes, Hashem has the ultimate power. You can even be Mechayim Esim. And then you have to ask, is it something that only this one can do? Is it something where he can tell you, sorry, that's not my department? So therefore, the third bracha, Ata Kadosh, we say that no, even the Kadoshim, even the Malachim, praise Hashem and understand that he's higher than them. And therefore, in other words, there's nobody else other than Hashem who could fulfill it. Now that we've finished that, now we're ready to ask for our needs.
Business.
Yeah. So, but also there's an idea. Also, the idea is the Rashba goes on to say the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is basically, is it that first the person is worried about their various needs, therefore first the person should unburden himself of those, and then he's in a frame of mind to praise Hashem, or is it that's what Rabbi Eliezer says, or Rabbi Yeshua says the other way around. Start with the praise of Hashem. Start particularly with the themes of these first three brachas, where you're establishing that everything you receive from Hashem is a gift, and that Hashem is all powerful, and that nobody else can do it. Once you've done that, then you're in the frame of mind to be asking for your needs.
You can do that.
Well, I mean,
going to do before and after.
So we'll see that the halacha is actually in a way neither. You do in Shemei Tefillah, but we'll see. Anyway. So the Gemara said, so four lines from the bottom. Mechti, now let's consider. Kroy loike marjaiki v'loike marjaiki. After all is said and done, the psukim are not precisely like either one of them, because the pasuk that Rabbi Eliezer said, Rabbi Yeshua has a different way of explaining it. The pasuk that Rabbi Yeshua brought, Rabbi Eliezer has a different way of explaining it. So they obviously are not basing themselves really on the psukim. They're using the psukim as an asmachta for their respective opinions, but you can't say that they looked at the pasuk and thereby got their opinion. So where does their machloikas come from? Like this, Kididorish Reb Simloi. It's based on what Reb Simloi darshin. By the way, I mean, often when the Gemara says this kind of thing, Reb Simloi lived a couple of generations after Reb Eliezer and Reb Yeshua. They're Tanoim, he's one of the early Amiroim. But the Gemara doesn't mean that they're quoting Reb Simloi. What Reb Simloi later on darshin is a concept that they knew of before. That hadn't been said in his name, but... Okay, Dorish
Reb Simloi. Rabbi, is there any rule of thumb to know just any hints from a Gemara's Lashon, if a person's a Tana or an Amira?
No, not always. I mean, obviously, if they mention a Mishnah or a Braisa, then they're a Tana. But other than that, no, not necessarily. Like this, we find Braisa where a Simloi says something, so that tells us that he's a Tana. And also, other than that, I mean, most people who are mentioned in Gemara are usually not mentioned only once. They're usually mentioned more than once. And therefore, from context, you can tell who they're talking with. If you find somebody talking, let's say, with Rav Huna, you know Rav Huna was an Amora, so you know whoever he's talking with must also be from that generation, must also be an Amora.
Okay.
Anyway, the Dorash of Simloi, lo'olam yisada odam shvacha shomokam ba'achak chisbalo. So, Rav Simloi says you should always first set up the praise of Hashem. First say again these first three brachas, where you're praising Hashem for his kindness to the Ovos, and that he's all-powerful, and that the Malachim declare him holy. Ba'achak chisbalo, then you should daven for your needs. Menolam mimoshe Rabbeinu, where do we see that? From Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's davening to Hashem in Parshas Vaschanan, Dichtiv, he begins off by saying, Hashem Elokim, Ata Chiloisa Laharis Es Abdecha B'Gomer, you've begun to show your servant, meaning me, all your greatness and your power, who is like you, who can accomplish that. Uchtiv Basre, and then the next Pasuk now. In the next Pasuk, Moshe starts asking for his needs. Ebra Nova Eretz Aretz HaTorah, let me pass over the Yarden and go see the good land of Eretz Yisrael. So we see that first the Shvach of Hashem and then the praise. So Rabbi Yeshua Sover Yochanan and Moshe. So Rabbi Yeshua says, as a blanket thing, we learn from Moshe, therefore, first Shvach of Hashem, then your needs. So therefore, first you should daven Shemana Esrei, which starts with Shvach, and then ask for your needs after Shemana Esrei. Rabbi Yehuda Sover Lo Yochanan and Moshe. Rabbi Yehuda says, fine, Moshe did that. You can't necessarily learn from him. Shiny Moshe did Rav Gurei. Moshe is a special case because he is very powerful. He's very, his Maisim, his Chochma is tremendously powerful. So therefore, he's able, given this idea that the Rashba was saying, that the idea is Rabbi Eliezer is saying, most people are not really in a frame of mind to praise Hashem before they've unburdened themselves of their needs. Well, Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu obviously was on a different level. He is always in the frame of mind to be able to first properly praise Hashem. Therefore, he can do that and first daven for his needs. We're not on that level. Therefore, Rashi says, Mechzi Kiyura, or it would look like a person is putting on airs to claim that I'm on that kind of level. And therefore to be able to do that. So when it comes to the set text of Shemana Esrei, of course, Rabbi Eliezer agrees. Okay, the set text of Shemana Esrei is like that. It starts with Shvach. We do learn, to that extent, we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. But to say that, therefore, that you should do like Rabbi Yeshua, daven the whole set text of Shemana Esrei, and then start asking for Yitzrachim, Rabbi Eliezer says the average person is not really capable of doing that properly.
But what Pesukim did was all Shvach, and that's the first one answer.
Okay, that's true. That's a different, that's true. I mean, when we say over here, so in that case, I think there are actually Rishonim who learn differently than Rashi. We're not talking about the order of things before and after Shemana Esrei. We are talking about before and after the other parts of davening. Yes, should you ask for Yitzrachim before Pesukim Dezimra, for example, or should you ask for them only after Shemana Esrei? Yes.
We need to
reinforce these ideas by ourselves. Yeah.
Okay. Why is it Mechzikiyura? What's the problem about praising Hashem?
Mechzikiyura means that it'll look like pride. It'll look like a person is putting on airs, like he's making himself greater than he really is. So you have those cases in halacha where we say that concept that a person on the one hand has to be an oved, a person has to serve Hashem, but on the other hand don't try to make yourself look bigger than you really are. Yeah, what were you going to say?
And she says, they made the Nusach Tfila.
Yeah.
So
they set it up. So they set it up according based on what Moshe did. So Rabbi Yeshua says, well, that makes a paradigm for us that we should always do that. Rabbi Eliezer says, fine, within Shemana Esrei itself, fine, you can be on Moshe's level. We say Shemana Esrei, you're an Olam Atzilut. So fine, you know, then. But the rest of the time, not necessarily. So therefore, better you should first unburden yourself of your tzaras and then yeah. Okay, anyway, the Chachamim Omrim, now the Chachamim say, which is where this came in, because again, we said Nochem Amodi said the same thing, Loi Kedivrezeh V'Loi Kedivrezeh, not like either one of them, Ela Shoyal Adam, but you should have it, you should ask for your needs in the middle of Shemana Esrei. Shoyal Adam Tzracha V'Shemei Atfila, a person should ask for his various needs within the Bracha of Shemei Atfila. And that is, in fact, the Halacha, Amar of Yehuda Amashmoah, Halacha Shoyal Adam Tzracha V'Shemei Atfila. So that's the one second, that's the next thing. Amr of Yehuda Breder of Shmuel Bashilas Mishmei Derav, Afafisha Amru. Now, even though we just said Shoyal Adam Tzracha B'Shemei Atfila, even though we just said that a person can daven for his various needs in Shemei Atfila, and that means anything, Abel, Im Ba Loima B'Soifko Bracha O Bracha Me'enko Bracha O Bracha, but it's not just Shemei Atfila, if he wants to say towards the end of any Bracha, something along the theme of the Bracha, then he can say it. So Rashi gives an example. Let's say you have a person who is not able to retain his learning. He forgets it easily. So let him add a line in Chodin Adas to ask Hashem to give him extra das, to give him extra intelligence. And he can say that before the end of the bracha. Before he says, Baruch Atah Hashem Chanan Adas, he can add in a few lines about that. If he's a Baal Tshuva, he can do in Haroitz of the Tshuva, and so forth. And so forth. In each bracha, you can do according to the theme of that bracha. Amr Rav Chiya Ba'ashi Amr Rav, and then Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says in the name of Rav, even though we just said that a person can ask for any of his needs in the bracha Shema Tfila, but it doesn't have to be only there. So if you have a sick person in his house, then he can ask for a refuah for him in the bracha of cholim, in refuahenu. If he sorech parnasa, and if he needs parnasa, you can say it in the bracha baruch aleinu, because that's all about parnasa. Now, is there a difference between these two statements that we just said? So Rashi doesn't comment on it, which implies that Achronim talk about, that implies Rashi apparently understands, and some other Rishonim also understand, there's no real difference between these two statements. Rav Yehuda Breid Rav Shmuel Bashilas is saying a general thing, that you can do it with any bracha, and Rav Chiya Ba'ashi is giving specific examples. For example, Refuah in Refuahenu, or Parnasa in Baruch Aleinu. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Yonah says there is a distinction. Rabbeinu Yonah says altogether there are four rules about what kinds of requests you can ask, about how you do personal requests in Shemoneh Esrei. There's a difference between, first of all, you can't, among other things, you can't say them before the bracha. You have to say it sometime, someplace in the middle of the bracha, so it doesn't look like you're putting your things ahead of what the Anshei Knesset Gadol set up. You have to have, you can't do it before the bracha, you have to do it someplace in the middle of the bracha. And he makes a distinction, first of all, between whether you're saying it in Lashon Yochid or Lashon Rabbin. The brachas in Shemoneh Esrei are all phrased in Lashon Rabbin, Refa'enu, Hashienu, Slachwanu, etc. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah says, if you want to add a tefillah for example, you have a person himself is sick, or he has a sick relative or whatever, he can say it b'loshen yachid close to the end of the bracha, and there's no problem with that. It doesn't look like he's adding to the nusach of the bracha. That would be what Rav Chiya Ba'ashi is saying when he says then he says you can add it in the middle of the bracha. Even you can add it in the middle of the bracha like that in loshen yachid. You can start saying, Rafa'enu Hashem b'nei rafi, Hashienu b'nei mashaya, kisi eloseinu ata. Hashem, please heal my relative, ploini ben ploinis. Ahalei arucho fershol forshlem ocho makaseinu, etc. But you can't say, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you couldn't do, for example, that Rafa'enu Hashem b'nei rafi, Hashienu b'nei mashaya, kisi eloseinu ata. Hashem, please heal all the cholei ama Yisrael, because that would be adding to the nusach of the bracha. So therefore, or let's say you have the sibur, let's say, for example, the rav is sick or whatever, you can't add, we, the sibur, need our rav to recover or whatever, because that would be like adding to the nusach of the bracha. What you can do is, you can do what the first thing said, what Rabbi Yehuda Breder of Shmuel Bashila said, is you could do that towards the end of the bracha. You could do, b'soif ko bracha or bracha, after the bracha, or right before Baruch Atah Hashem, you could add such a thing. That doesn't look like you're adding to the bracha. And then you can add anything you want in Shemiah Tvila, as long as it's not too long. And you can add, as the Gemara is going to say next, that you can add after Yiyu L'Ratzin, you can add as long as you want. And also,
it still counts after Yiyu L'Ratzin.
Yeah, after Yiyu L'Ratzin, yeah. That's the Gemara is going to say that next. Tosfos also makes a further distinction over here between whether it's something for the Yachid or for the Rabbim, because we see, for example, by Chazaras HaShas and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we add in huge numbers of piyotim, even in the first three brachas, because even though you're not usually supposed to add in at request for needs over there, because there's a difference between the Yachid and the Rabbim. Anyway, so the Beis Yosef says, in principle, the halacha ought to be like most of the Rishonim, who don't make all these distinctions that Rabbeinu Yonah makes. Nevertheless, he says it is better to be careful according to Rabbeinu Yonah's shita and make that distinction between whether you're phrasing it in singular or in plural, and therefore where you're sticking it in the bracha. Okay. Amar Rabbi Shor ben Levi, and then Rabbi Shor ben Levi says, here's another detail. Even though we said that you can ask for your needs in Shemiah Tefillah, there you have to keep it fairly brief, because part of the rules are also, you can't have that your tefillah over there is going to overwhelm the original nusach. You can't have that you're the original nusach of Shemiah Tefillah is four lines in the Siddur, and you're going to add 20 lines. It's not right. But if you want to add something after Shemiah Esrei, meaning after Yiyu L'Ratzin, after the first Yiyu L'Ratzin, that is, after the first Yiyu L'Ratzin, afilu kisedu Yom Kippurim, even if you want to add something as long as what we say at the end on Yom Kippur, all of Al-Chet and all the everything that we add over there, Omer, then you can say as long as you want over there.
That's after the last
bracha. That's after Hambaruch HaSam Yisrael B'Shalom and after Yiyu L'Ratzin. Then you can add in as long as you want. But up till that point, you can add in things in the individual brachas, as we said, subject to the other rules. But, yeah, that's true. But that's the place for personal things like that. And again, Tosfos makes the distinction over here that when it comes to the tzibur, then you have more latitude. Then you can add in even long things in the various brachas. It used to be a more common minhag to add in piyutim in many places in davening. Various Rishonim had problems with that on various grounds, but nevertheless, nowadays, we have it by Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In some kehillos, they also have it on the Sholosh Piyotim. In some kehillos, they also have them on the Sholosh Regolim and on the Arba Parshiyos. But it used to be a much more widespread thing, and it used to also be much more widespread to have them in many different places during Shemona Esrei, not just in the first three brachas like we have now.
So what did they say that Tokyo Rabbim is that you can ask in the first three brachos?
So that is why, yeah, that's how we're able to add the piyotim. That is also how we're able to add Zachreinu and Mikamoicha and Rasefer and so forth, because those are all considered Tokyo Rabbim. So therefore, the rules about not adding to them in the first three and last three brachos of Shemana Esrei don't apply to those.
So you can have in mind, in other words, Tokyo Rabbim in the first three brachos.
Right.
Now, some say better not to ask for your request to the Dibur, but have it in thought.
Could be. I mean, the fact is, for example, you can find in many Siddurim, they have, for example, a footnote by Rafa'enu that if you have a chola in your house, that you can add in a line over there, Shlach Rafur Shlema Leponi Ben Plonis. Our Siddurim don't have that. Could be, because maybe Taka, because it's better to think it than to speak it. I don't know. All right. Mishnah says, the Elu Edehen Shal Ovid Kechavim. Okay, the following are the holidays of the Goyim, which we've been saying the last two Mishnayos, that you're not allowed to do business with them on those holidays or 3 days before them. Kalenda Ustanura V'Kartesim. Kalenda and Ustanura we'll deal with in the Gemara right after the Mishnah, what the definition of those are. We discussed it briefly the other day. Kalenda, according to almost all the Rishonim, means January 1st. Starnura, the Gemara is going to tell us, is 8 days before the Tekorpa. So in those days, the winter Tekorpa, the winter solstice was December 25th. So Starnura is December 17th. By the way, the real Roman name for it was Saturnalia. The Mishnah changed it, among others, because they try to avoid mentioning things that involve the names of Getchkas. And in those nowadays, okay, we mentioned Saturn because nobody worships anymore, and we mention it as a planet. But in those days, it was the name of a god that they worshipped. So the Mishnah tries to change the name. And the Tiferes Yisrael points out the word Star Nura can be made up of two Aramaic words. Star means the side, Nura means the fire. So it means the fiery sun is by the side because it's almost the winter solstice. It's very low in the sky, so therefore that became an appropriate name for it. Okay. Kartesim, we'll learn on Amud Beis what it is. Anyway, V'yom Ginusia Shomachehem, then also the day of Ginusia of their kings. The Gemara is going to later on discuss on Daf Yod, later on, does Ginusia mean the day the king was born or does it mean the day he was crowned? The Yom HaLeda, the Yom HaMisa, and the day of the birth and the day of the death. So beginning from this point of the Yom HaLeda, you have many different opinions among the Rishonim. Where at some point in our Mishnah, we switch from national Roman or whatever pagan holidays to individual ones that are celebrated by individual Goyim. Where that break point is, you have a three or four different opinions among the Mefarshim. Rashi understands that the Yom HaLeda and the Yom HaMisa over here are still referring to the king. So therefore, it means the king's birthday, or the Gemara discusses later on. Maybe it means the crown prince's birthday, whatever. And V'yom HaMisa, the day the previous king died. Again, according to some other Rishonim, it means any individual goy's birthday or yahrzeit, so to speak. Again, it wouldn't mean that it wouldn't be binding on the whole people. Obviously, it would mean that they would mean that goy's immediate that goy himself and his immediate relatives, whatever. Yeah. Divir Reb Meir. That's what Reb Meir says as a blanket statement, that the day of the death of any king is a festival for Avodah Zarah. The Chum say it depends. Kol Misa Sheyesh B'Sreifa, when the Misa involved Sreifa, which Rashi explains it means, it was a common practice in those days that when a king died, they would take all of his personal effects and burn them. It was meant as a symbol, like nobody else is worthy to use these things. The Gemara elsewhere talks about, I think we learned about it in Sanhedrin, that actually it was even, it's allowed for Jewish kings also. In fact, it's mentioned as a custom in Tanakh. Because the idea is to burn all of his personal effects. Because in Sanhedrin, it talks about, the Mishnah talks about that nobody else is allowed to use his scepter and the horse he rode on, etc. So they developed a meaning among the Goyim and Lahavdil among the Jews, and it's not considered Avodah Zarah, to burn his personal effects. But nevertheless, our Mishnah is saying, fine, the burning in and of itself is not Avodah Zarah, but when they consider him important enough to burn his personal effects, that shows that they're deifying him. That shows that they're considering him a god and therefore making his Yahrzeit be a holiday. A different explanation based on Yerushalmi is that Sreifa over here means they burn Ketoros in his honor, incense. But yeah, anyway. So when there's Sreifa, say the Chachamim, Yesh Ba'avod is Chachamim, it means there's Avodah Zarah involved. They worship Avodah Zarah that day, and they make it every year, and they make it every year of an aid, of a festival of theirs. Meshein Ba'Sreifa, in Ba'avod is Chachamim. If there's no Sreifa of personal effect, so if incense involved, say the Chachamim, then it's not one that involves Avodah Zarah. We don't assume that they make a Goyish festival.
They don't go by the previous...
So Rav Meir had said there's no distinction, but Chachamim make that distinction. Okay. Aval, but... Yom Tiglachas Konoy of Lurisoi, but the day that he shaves his beard or his blurtis, beard we know what it is, a blurtis, Rashi learns that a blurtis is a lock of hair that he would grow at the back of his head. And then every year the goy would shave it off and then make a festival in honor of his getchkes. There's different other explanations where the blurtis is. The Rambam seems to understand a blurtis is more like a mohawk down the middle of the head. I think some people say maybe it's in the front of the head, whatever. It's probably, whatever it is. It's some kind of growth of hair. So the day that he shaves his beard or his blurtis and makes then a festival in honor of Getchkes, and here also you have some of the Rishonim learn that this and the next couple of ones that we're going to mention over here are still all talking about the king. We're not talking necessarily an individual goy shaves his beard and makes a chag out of it for himself. We're talking about the king on the day. Let's say you had a guy who became king or emperor or whatever at a young age. So then when he first grows a beard and then he shaves it off ritually and showing that he's now a man, then they would make a chag out of it.
What does it care about the individuals that could be doing it every day of the year?
The point would be, if you know that a particular individual is making on a certain day, he's shaving his beard and making a festival in honor of his getchka, then you would be also to do with him business on that day. You'd be mutter to do business with his neighbors, just not with him. That's the mission is going to continue.
Just don't tell
him. Yeah. The Yom Sha'olah Bo Min HaYam, also the day that he came from the sea, which means, in other words, so now he makes it he starts to sacrifice. So again, either it means the individual or the king, according to the different Mephoshim. So it means, he had a sea voyage, and in those days it was pretty dangerous. Some of the Mephoshim understand that it actually means like he was shipwrecked and then saved from it. So of course, he goes and does the Goyish version of benching Goyim, or the Goyish version of bringing a korban toda in honor of the Lahabdil, in honor of their Getchkes. So therefore, then it becomes an Avodah Zarah festival for him. The Yom Shiyotim Beis Asurin, or the day he got out of jail. It could also conceivably be a king. Being a king in those days was not such a safe job either. You could sometimes end up in jail. Okay.
But he'll get out of jail.
No, well, depends. Okay. The Ovid Kechavim Shosam Nishtal of Noi. Here, definitely, this next one, Ovid Kechavim over here, is definitely talking about an individual. All the other ones, again, maybe they're talking about individuals, maybe they're talking about the king, anyway. Shosam Nishtal of Noi, where he makes a feast for his son's wedding, those and of course he sacrifices to his getchkes, all those kinds of things. All those, there's no 3 days before that you're also, and there's no that you have that extends more broadly. It only applies to that particular day and that particular person who's involved in the celebration that you're not allowed to do business with him.
That's according to the.
Everybody agrees with that. The only machlokes between the Chachamim and Rav Meir is: are we saying that every king's yahrzeit is an Avodah Zarah festival, or are we distinguishing what kind of things they did by his funeral, whether they burned his stuff and burnt Ketoros or not? Yeah.
Does this day start at night, or is it during the day for the
Pashtos is their big Goyish holiday. They probably start during the day. I don't know. Okay. Amar of Chanan Bar Rav. What are the definitions of the first two holidays, the first two Chagos in our Mishnah, Kalenda and Sarnura? Kalenda is Ches Yomim Achat Tkufa. Kalenda is the 8 days after the Tkufa. The Tkufas Tevis we're talking about. In those days, it was December 25th, so it's the 8 days from then until January 1st. Starnura Ches Yomim Lifnei Tkufa, and Starnura is the 8 days before the Tkufa, so beginning December 17th. Actually, it's not so simple that it means those days. First of all, Tosfos a couple of blocks ago talked about maybe there were a few days like this. You go from the 17th to the 24th is Starnura, and from the 25th to the 1st is Kalenda, so there's no break between them. From the Gemara before, it was Mashma, there's a little bit of a break between them. So Tosfos says maybe there is a couple of days break between them. The Tosfos read actually has a different understanding. Well, the word Kalenda was a Roman word for the beginning of their month. That's where we get the word calendar in English.
Calendar.
Yeah, that's where we get the word calendar, yeah. So pretty much everybody says, again, that we're talking the beginning of their year, January 1st. The Tosfos Rid wants to say, on the basis of the Gemara that we're going to discuss soon, how these holidays came to be in the first place, he wants to say that actually we're talking about 8 days before Tkufas Nissan. So therefore, it would be later. It would be beginning from March 25th and ending April 1st or whatever. We'll see soon. We'll see soon when we talk about how these were established in the first place.
Was it according to the sun? Or
is so the Tkufas go according to the sun, yes. So nowadays, the solstices and the equinoxes are on the 21st or 22nd of the various respective months. In those days, they used the Julian calendar. It was on the 25th.
Rabbi, can I ask you one question? Just the last 2 words of the Mishnah, but Isai Ha'ish Bilvad, isn't that by all the last ones about the Glacha Ziknei Blair? Say that's all Isai Ha'ish, no?
But that depends where you're doing the changeover from the ones involving kings to the ones involving individuals. Are we saying that beginning from that only the last one, Ovid Gechavim Shaf and Mishdal of Noah, is talking about an individual, all the other ones are talking about ones involving the king? Or are we talking about that Yom HaLeda and Yom HaMisa refer already to individuals? Or is it broken someplace in between? Maybe Yom HaLeda and Yom HaMisa apply to the kings, and then Tiglachas Konu of Larissa applies to individuals, which is how Rashi learns it. But then
they would all be Oseish,
right,
according to that second way.
Whichever ones are meant to apply to Yechidim, that one only apply to Oseayim and Oseish, right? So, for example, shaving of the beard day. If we mean that it's talking about the emperor shaving his beard and making it a holiday, then we're talking a national holiday. If we're talking a yachid, then we're talking that individual. Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
The simonach, so the way to remember which one is which, kalenda and sonura, as the pasuk says, ochor v'kedem sartoni v'goymer pasuk and tilim, you created me back and front. So therefore, this is actually, the Marshal points out, it's very appropriate too. This is actually a pasuk from Kapitel Kuf Lamed Tes, which was composed by Adam Rishon. And the Gemara is going to say now that the origin of these holidays, Kalenda and Stanura, goes all the way back to Adam Rishon. So therefore, very appropriately, we bring a pasuk from his Kapitel. But the point is, Ocher, the back, is mentioned before Kedem, the front. The same way, that helps us remember that in our Mishnah, Kalenda comes later than Stanura. The calendar is beginning December 25th, and Stanura is beginning December 17th.
Is it got anything to do with Christianity, or these?
No, these are Roman pagan holidays. We discussed the other day the question. I mean, you have Rishonim. We discussed a couple of times already the question that Rishonim discussed whether the Christians are considered Oved Avodah Zarah according to the Rambam and many other Rishonim. They are. Tosfos also discusses that they are. Just we have Heterim on various grounds, including that a lot of their holidays are in honor of their saints. The Me'iri holds they're not. Yeah.
This is before the adopted Christianity.
This is when we're talking the old Roman and Greek pagan religion. Turn it up on. We learn in a Braisa. How did the Goyim come to have these holidays in the first place? Lefisha ra Adam Rishon Yom Shemismayit v'Holech. Adam Rishon saw sometime after he was created that the days are getting shorter and shorter from Tishrei till Beis. Omar, so he says, he didn't realize that it's a natural thing. He says, Oili, woe to me, Shema v'shvil shasarachi, maybe it's because I sinned, that I did the chete tadat, Olam choshuch badi, maybe therefore the world is getting dark for me, it's getting darker and darker, v'choyza v'toyer v'voyer, it's going back to emptiness and nothing, v'zui misa, sh'niknas alayim in Hashemayim, this is maybe the way that the Eivishter decided, he said that I'm going to die, b'yom achochem en amos tomus, so maybe this is how he's going to have it happen, that there's going to be more and more darkness until that's it.
So when
it's all gone.
Which part of the year?
That's what we have to figure out. The Gemara is going to talk about soon. Wait. So therefore, Amad v'yoshav ches yomim v'tainus of tefillah. So he spent the next 8 days fasting, the last 8 days until the solstice, fasting and davening. Kivin sherot tekufas tevis. Then when he sees that the tekufa comes, the solstice comes, and now v'rol yom shamaris v'harilich, now he sees the days are starting to get longer again. Amad, so he realized, okay, that's the natural way, the way the world works. Because then he would have gotten some simon that it's tefillah specifically. No, just the fact that it happened like that without him being told that it, as a result of your tefillah, I'm changing the gzeira. No. So he realized minhagish shalolamu. This is the natural way of the world. Halach va'ata shmoni yom tovim. So he made the next 8 days days of celebration. L'shana acheres, the next year, asan la'elu la'elu yom tovim. The next year, he made both sets of 8 days yom tovim. Because now there's no reason to fast and daven anymore during those last 8 days. So he made it a celebration in honor of Hashem who created the season. And that is, by the way, why, before we should say, that is one reason why our Mishnah mentions calendar before Stanura. Why is it mentioning the later one before the earlier one? Because historically, that's how it came about, that Adam first celebrated what later became Kalenda, the 8 days after the solstice. The next year is the first time that he celebrated the 8 days as the eight last days before it ends.
What did the tshuva for the chet? Was he forgiven right away?
He was forgiven to a certain extent, but still, I mean, obviously there was still the after effects. Who kavim l'shem shemayim? So he set up these 16 days in honor of Hashem. Behem kavim l'shem avadis kachavim. The goyim took them over and then made them in honor of their geshkes, as is often the case. Yeah. Okay.
Well, often?
What?
It's often.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Bishleim l'manda, we have to figure out why was Adam so worried? Bishleim l'manda amr b'tishrei nivra olam. I can understand according to the opinion that the world and therefore Adam were created in Tishrei and the chet etadas happened then. Fine, you can understand why he was so worried. Yoyma zuti chaza, he had only seen the days getting shorter and shorter from Tishrei till Tevis. Yoyma arichi akati lo chaza, he hadn't yet seen long days to realize that there are times of the year when the day gets longer and longer, and therefore he was just el lamando amma ben nissen nivra olam. But according to the opinion that the world was created in Nissen, which is Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, why was he so worried? Hachazi le yoyma zuti v'yoyma arichi. He already saw there are shorter days in Nissen time. It gets longer and longer towards Tammuz. Then it starts getting shorter and shorter. So what's he worried about? The answer is, fine, but he hadn't seen such short days yet, Tevis time. Because either way, whether he was created in Tishrei or Nissen, Tevis is the time when the days are shortest. So he hadn't seen them so short, so therefore he was worried. So therefore he had cause to worry. Now, the question is, I mean, Mephoshim talk about, the Ritva asks, I mean, come on, was Adam stupid or something? He was a brilliant person. How could he not realize that this is how Hashem created the world? So he says maybe after the first, maybe after the chet etadas, maybe some of his intelligence was taken away, so he wasn't so smart anymore. But after all, you know what, ein b'shivin al ha'gada. You know what, this is agadta, it's not necessarily meant that you can't necessarily ask kashas on it. You know, they have the popular expression, af a maisa fregman nishkin kashas, you don't have questions on stories. So the Ritva says it's somewhat similar over here. Okay, you know, you have a nice drusha, a nice agadta that the Gemara is saying over here. It's not necessarily meant to be taken literally. Different other mephoshim talk about different possibilities. Marshaw talks about an interesting idea. Maybe what it was is, according to the opinion that it was created in Nissen, maybe Adam figured like this. Okay, I understand that the world is created a certain way that the days get longer and shorter. But you know what? He thought to himself, maybe the original plan of Hashem was, if it hadn't been for the Chet Etadas, the days would keep on getting longer and longer. The daylight hours would keep on getting longer and longer. So therefore, he thinks to himself, now when the days are getting so short, maybe just the opposite. Maybe Hashem is showing that I intended it should always be getting more and more light. Instead, because of your chet, it's getting more and more dark until it's going to be completely extinguished. And that's what had him so worried. So he might have realized, in other words, there is a natural cycle over here, but he didn't realize necessarily that the natural cycle is that it should get sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. He might have thought it's always going to be, if it hadn't been for the chet egel, longer and longer.
Well, there would be no light.
Eventually, there would be all light, in other words. And then Rabbi Yonasan Ivershitz has a fascinating explanation about it. He says like this. He brings from the Zohar that Gan Eden is on the equator. So what happens? After the Chet Etadas, Hashem kicks Adam and Chava out of Gan Eden, and they end up in the area near Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is 32 degrees north of the equator about. So therefore they have seasons. Sometimes the days are longer, some days they're shorter. So Adam gets worried like this. Okay, I understand that fine. It's a natural cycle. Eventually the tekukah is gonna come and the days are gonna start getting longer. But how do I know Hashem is gonna leave me here? Maybe what Hashem intends is he's gonna leave me here until the days get as short as possible. Then when they start getting longer again, he's gonna move me from here to Australia or something, and I'm gonna have to again experience short days. I'm gonna have to be experienced short days all the time. When he saw that he's left where he is, that Hashem is not moving him around, then he was very happy. Yes, that's Rabbi Yonasan Ivershitz's of our
day. The day is good and night is no good because they don't have electricity.
They didn't have electricity, and wild animals roam around, like it says in the pasuk. Yeah, it's a dangerous time. Yeah. Okay, turn it up on him. We learn in another braisa. Yom Shenivra by Adam Arishon, on the day that Adam was created, Kivin Sheshaka Olav Chama, when the sun set for the first time, there was the same kind of worry that he had. He didn't know. Omar, he says, Oili b'shvil shesarachti, oilam choshuch badi, woe is me, because I did this avera, the world is going to be dark for me. The world is going to go back to Torah Vavoyu, to nothingness. The Zuri Misa Shenichnasa Alai Min HaShemayim. This is the Misa that Hashem made on me, Min HaShemayim, that Hashem imposed on me, Min HaShemayim. Hoya Yoshev V'tayna Suboicha Kol HaLayla. So he's sitting and fasting that entire night. V'chava Boicha Kedegde. And Chava is sitting opposite him also crying. You're laughing, but I mean, you have to imagine. You never experienced night before. You would be terrified.
Yeah, it is terrifying.
Yeah. Kivin Sha'ola Omad HaShacha, when dawn broke, Omar, he realized, Minhag HaShalom, this is the way that Eibishter made the world, this is the way Hashem made the world, that the sun rises and the sun sets and there's darkness and there's light.
Minhag HaShalom, or they made a nest room?
No, Minhag HaShalom, it's the normal way. And as a matter of fact, actually, it's an interesting thing. It's brought it's brought in Midrashim that actually the original, we know that Adam and Chava were created on Friday. There is an idea that it says in Midrashim that even though the Chet Tadas also took place on Friday, it was still light throughout the whole rest of Friday and Shabbos. It didn't get dark.
Really?
Only about the Shabbos it got dark for the first time. That is why Adam was afraid of the dark, and that's when he struck the two stones together and made fire, and that's why we said, Bore Murda Esham by Abdullah on Mount Shabbos, to commemorate that discovery of fire of Adam. Anyway, the point is, we're talking about that Adam had just experienced 36 hours of complete light, and all of a sudden Mount Shabbos is getting dark. It was really scary. So now when the sun rose, according to this, it'd be Sunday morning, so he realized that's the normal way. So now in gratitude to Hashem, Omad Vehikru Shor, he went and brought as a korban an ox, Chakarnav Kodmin Laparsoso, whose horns were created before its hooves. Meaning, Rashi says, we know that all the creatures that were created in Maaseh Bereishis, so normally, when an ox is born nowadays, it has hooves when it's born, and it develops horns later. But Maaseh Bereishis, we know that all of the animals were created fully grown. Therefore, you know, when you have the question, what came first, the chicken or the egg, I'll be told you, the answer is the chicken came first, because all the creatures were created fully grown. So therefore, that means the ox was created first. The ox is created fully grown, already with horns. So therefore, its horns came before its hooves. And in fact, Tosfos talks about elsewhere, there's also the idea, how were the animals created? Hashem says, Toseh ha'aretz, let land bring forth living creatures. So that means each of them are like coming up from the ground. So therefore, when the ox comes out, its horns come out of the ground first, and then its body, and then the horns, last of all, so the horns. That's how it went. So therefore, he brought that original shur as a carbon. Shenema, as the Pasuk says in Tehillim, this David HaMelech asks that my tefillah should be accepted to Hashem. The sitav Hashem, that my tefillah should be good and acceptable to Hashem. Mishur par, more than a shur par. So Rashi explains a shur implies a shur could be a shur and par are both words for oxen, but the difference is the word shur can mean even when it's newborn. Shur a kesev ha'ez ki yivale. On the other hand, par means when it's grown a couple of years. So therefore, shur par implies a shur that chronologically is, it means an animal that chronologically is a shur because it was just created a day or two ago. But in maturity, it's a par because it already has horns. So let my tefillah be better than a shur par. Makrin makris, that has horns and that has hooves. So therefore, we see that the horns come before the hooves. But Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Shmuel, and also Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, there was something else unique about this ox. Shur Shehikrav, Adam Arishin, Keren Achas Hoysle Mitzchay. This ox that Adam brought as this korban had one horn on its forehead, unlike regular oxen that have two. Different Mephoshim talk about different reasons why that should have been so. Among the many other reasons is in order to represent the Achdus of Hashem. Anyway, Shenema, same topic. The seat of Lashem Mishurper, Makrin Makris, that has a keren and that has horns. So the question is, Makrin Tauti Mashma. The word Makrin implies that it has a normal number of horns, which is two.
Makrin
implies that it has horns, that it has the normal amount of horns.
How can he walk without hooves, by the way?
Who said it? I don't understand.
First the horns.
First the horns came out of the ground, and then the rest of it. It's like you have to imagine as if like there's an elevator or something coming out of the ground, or maybe as if the dirt itself is forming the body and coming up. Whatever it is, I don't know. But whatever the point is, that the horns come out first. Yeah. Okay. So the question is again, Makrin implies that there's two horns. Amar Rav Nachman is Mikeren Ksiv. Yes, but in Tilim, the word is spelt without the yud. Therefore, we can read it as if it said Mikeren, which therefore means of the horns, so only one horn. So that's where we see that it only had one horn. Now back to halacha. So the point is that now we've established what kalenda and starnura are, when they take place, and how do these chagas come about in the first place, that Adar Mereshin is the first one to come up with them, and then later on the goyim took them over for their purposes. Okay. Amr of Masna. Roimi sha'asa kalenda. Now suppose that the city of Rome declares a certain day as kalenda. Now, you have nearby cities that are subjugated to it. They're all part of the empire. Now, Rashi learns that what it is those other cities don't necessarily celebrate this kalenda, or at least they don't celebrate it on the same day. Maybe they celebrate it some other time or whatever. However, they do business. They have to pay taxes to Rome. They do business with it or whatever. So the question is, if you sell something, if you do business with a goy in one of those cities, that whatever you sell to them or whatever you buy from them may end up in Rome and be used for the chagra. Are you allowed to do that? Can you do that? The Ritva has a different explanation. The Ritva says if that was the only problem, of course there'd be no problem. The question is, the Ritva understands, and many other Rishonim also understand it this way, and this is how the Rambam brings it, l'halacha. We're talking about the other cities, of course they celebrate kalenda on the same day as Rome do. But they don't actually worship the same, they don't worship the Geshkes on that day. They keep it because they're under Rome's subjugation, and therefore if Rome has a holiday on that day, then they keep it also. But they're not making an idolatrous thing out of it the way that Rome does. So now the question becomes, okay, on the one hand, they're celebrating the chagra. On the other hand, they're not doing it for idolatrous purposes. They're not worshiping other. So therefore, can you do business with them? So the Masna is saying, so the question is, are you allowed to do business with people from those cities or no? So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kalenda asura lakorvi. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, kalenda is also to everybody. Meaning, regardless whether it's in Rome or outside. So, according to Rashi, regardless whether they're celebrating kalenda or not, or according to everybody else, regardless whether they actually worship on that day, because either way, once it's a Roman kalenda, then it applies across the board to them also. Rabbi Yechanan says no, ein asura el alayv de'al bovad. No, it's only also to the people who worship on it. So either according to Rashi or according to everybody else, it would only be also to do business with a Roman on that day. You'd be allowed to do business with somebody from one of the nearby cities. Yes. Tana Kavaseid Rabbi Yochanan. In fact, we learn a braisa which agrees with what Rabbi Yochanan said. Afapicha Amru Roimi Asta Kalenda. Even though we're saying that Rome declared a certain day as Kalenda, V'Cholayoras Asmuchas L'Mishtabesva, and all the other nearby cities are all subject to it. No, nonetheless, since according to Rashi, they don't actually celebrate it, or according to everybody else, they celebrate it, but they don't worship then. He asked me, in Asura, El Olaiv De'al Bovad. So therefore, it itself, the whole Isser only applies only to the people who are worshiping it. So it doesn't apply to the nearby cities. And in fact, later on in the Masechta, also the Gemara talks about that even on the holiday itself, we discussed it briefly. Tosfos mentioned at the beginning of the Masechta, if you have a goy who does not worship Avodah Zarah, then yes, you're allowed to do business with him or give him or receive presents on that day. So So the Gemara mentions later on in the Masechta, the Gemara mentions that Rava had a goyish acquaintance who he knew didn't worship Avodah Zarah, and therefore he accepted a present or said he did business with him or accepted a present or gave him a present or whatever it is on the Chag. Yeah. I guess it's somewhat similar to the way nowadays you might have, for example, I mean you have goyim who celebrate Xmas but don't actually believe in anything.
An exception like that.
No, but that's where we're explaining that's where the Braita is clarifying that it's only the whole Isser is for the Oiv David Azara. Therefore, it doesn't apply to the ones who are not.
Right, isn't it a problem that we have to get involved in our personal lives and see how firm they are in order to determine?
No, it's not necessarily you have to get involved. But if you know, in this case, for example, Rava knew about his friend, about his acquaintance or whatever, that he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah. And Masama, I mean, if they knew each other, Masama, at one time or another, they probably got to talking about it. And yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Rava had Galatian friends.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What about Stranlia, which is again the Starnura of our Mishnah, Kartesim and Kratesim, the other festival in our Mishnah, V'yen Genusia Shamachem, and the day of Genusia of their kings, again either the birthday or the coronation day, as we'll discuss later, V'yoyim Shehum Lach Be'Melech, and the day that a king was crowned. All of those days, the fun of Asur L'Achrav and Achrav Mutter. All those days, also all those kinds of days, the 3 days before Asur, the days after it on Mutter, not like Rabbi Shmuel before, we said the 3 days after Asur. also by Mishdalif. No, you know, if a goy makes an individual wedding celebration for his son, and also Eloisayim Varisayish, then as our Mishnah said, then you're only also to do business with that person that day, that person, and only on that day. But no 3 days before.
Anything lends you to the Mishnah, what do you do?
That's what we're going to see next. Omer Ravashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. So Ravashi says, yes, you can actually, you don't just need the Braisa. You have our Mishnah says the same thing as Rav Yechanan, and that the surrounding cities are mutter. Because the Mishnah had said, Dekatana Yem Tiglachas Konu of Lurisa, the day when he shaves his beard or his blurred, the Yem Sha'olabim in a Yam, and the day he comes safely from the sea, the Yem Sha'yotam of Beit Asurin, and the day he gets out of jail. We said all of those. We said only that day and only that person is also. So you have to ask like this, why does the Mishnah have to bother mentioning that person? I can understand why the Mishnah has to say only that day is also La Puk Lufon of Alachrov. To tell us that unlike the national Chagas, where you have 3 days before, and according to Rabbi Shmuel, 3 days after, here it's not. Here it's only the particular day that he has the celebration. But, says Ravashi, why does the Mishnah have to say you can't do business only with that person? Of course, if you only have that Joe is shaving his beard, why shouldn't I be allowed to do business with Harry? Ella, my lapuki mishabdav. Obviously, then the Mishnah must be coming to exclude, even though Harry is working, is subjugated to Joe, he's a servant, he's a whatever, as long as he's not participating, as long as he's not the one who's shaving or whatever, then you're allowed to. We're not worried that he's going to take whatever you give him and bring it to his boss or whatever, and he'll end up using it for a carbon. Or like everybody else, like the Ritva says, that he's joining in the celebration in order to flatter his master or his boss or whatever. But he's not actually worshiping it. It's not a problem. You're allowed to do business with this other guy. Shmami no sadat. Now you were asking what happens if the goy invites you to the wedding party. Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yisrael shabuchutz la'aretz oiv ya'averus kachavim b'taret. Jews who live in chutz la'aretz are worshiping avodah zarah in purity. Meaning they're doing something wrong, as he's going to go on to say, but they're not doing it they don't even realize that it's a problem. They're doing it for Tara in a sense, innocently.
Naively,
basically, yeah. By the way, in Chassidus, in many, many places in Chassidus, this expression, Oiv Yavodah Sechavim B'Tarahein, is brought in a slightly different context than what we're saying in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to talk about when you're invited to a goy party and you go. In Chassidus, there's a Maimon right at the beginning of Torah Ur. There's another one in Likud Torah. There's Maimorim from older Rebbeim that discuss that mention these words Oved Avodah Zarah V'Tarahein. And they talk about the deeper idea that is when a person gives more weight to something that is not part of Kedusha than they should. One example being, for example, we know a Yid has to work and earn a living. But if a person gives too much weight to that and starts believing that the parnasa is the main thing, that's a form of Oveda Avodah Zarah V'Tara. You're attributing power to Avodah Zarah to something other than Kedusha that it doesn't really have. And the same thing.
So would you say that means you work more in hours than you should, or
it can
you
mean,
pay
well,
more importance?
You pay more importance. You give more importance to it than it should. You have, for example, you have the story involving the Rebbe Rashab with his chassid who opens a factory for making galoshes, overshoes, and he gets really, really involved in it. And the Rebbe Rashab says to him, I've heard of people putting their feet in galoshes. I never heard of somebody putting their head into galoshes. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. So there's that. In other Maimorim, it talks about also the idea, for example,
we don't know.
In other Maimorim, it talks about the idea also that includes a person who is a Baal Gaiva, for example, where also like he's pushing a course out of the world. So all these kinds of things are examples of Avodah Zarah V'Tara. They're all a lesser form of Avodah Zarah, so to speak.
I like the word V'Tara.
Yeah. Okay, because after all, they're doing it innocently, but nevertheless, yeah. Ketan, what do we mean? What are these Jews in Chutz La'aretz doing? Ovid Kachavim Sha'asa Mishdalim.
Rabbi, can I ask you one question? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'd like to take an extra second because I want to make sure the question makes sense. Finished off saying that there's a raya that because it says Oisei Ish, so that shows that people that are, even Mishabadim you'd be allowed to do business with. But that raya is only referring to those like mini Yom Tovim. We don't know, that doesn't prove about Kalenda and Saturnilla.
No, but well, first of all, again, we have that goes back to the question whether the Glachas, Tonu, Rissa, etc., are personal.
Right, so I was leading into that. That shows that it's all one in Hemshah. So otherwise, the Rai wouldn't make sense.
Maybe, but yeah, okay. But even so, the basic idea is, again, like Rashi is saying, that, I mean, you know, a person and his mishabodim, a person and his servants, for example, have the same basic relationship between them as Rome does with its satellite cities, and you still say that you're not concerned that you're going to do business with this with the servant, and he's going to turn around and then bring whatever you gave him to his master, and his master is going to use it for part of the celebration. You're not worried about that. By the same logic, you're allowed to do business with the city nearby Rome, even though the stuff that you sell them may end up in the hands of the Romans themselves.
Okay. And Miflach, by the way, in Rashi is boss.
Say what?
Mimatule le Miflach. Miflach is boss.
Le Miflach means the servant, means the worship of Adazara.
I mean, oh, to worship. Okay.
Polach is the equivalent. Polach in Aramaic is the equivalent of Ovad in Hebrew. It means to worship.
Okay.
Okay. So how? So what are these? What are these Jews in Chutz La'aretz doing? Case that. Oved kachavim she'asa mishalov no. You have a goy made wedding party for his son. The zimin kol ha'yehudim shebeirei, and he invites all the Jews in his city. Even though these Jews are eating their own food and drinking their own food, everything has the best possible hashgacha. The shama shalahen omen lutneim, and they have their own personal waiter. So on the face of it, then what should be the problem? So everything is kosher. No, mala aleim akosif kilo ochlam is yitchemesim posif. Still considers it as if they ate from sacrifices to the dead, meaning tavod zara. Shenema, as the posuk says, that you have to keep away from the goyim because you don't want that he'll invite you and you'll eat from his sacrifices. In other words, the very fact that you're invited and you go ahead makes it the equivalent as if you're eating from his sacrifices to his getchkes, even though it's your own food. What?
So you decline the invitation,
whatever. Okay, so the question is the ema ad ochil. So maybe the problem is only if you actually eat there. Maybe the problem is only if you eat his food. Who says the problem is eating your own food at his party? Omar Rava.
No, but
that's the question. How do you know that achalta mizivchay means that you eat from your own food and it's considered as if you ate from his sacrifices? Maybe it means if you literally eat from his sacrifices, then you're over. Because that would be zivchay mesiv. But Rava said, in Cain, name a krova, chalta mizivchay. Yes, but then the pasuk didn't have to mention the korolachal that he invites you. My v'korolachal, why does the pasuk have to add the detail that he invites you? Nishas kriya, it implies, from the time when he invites you, if you then go, then you're already over. So therefore, don't do that.
Even when you're done.
Right. No. We're talking about if you ate something. Obviously, there's still to be a chalta of some kind. Mishas kriya, then all the food that you are going to eat there, whether it's your own food or his, is going to be also on the basis. Now, with that said, though, I'll tell you, I mean, so we'll continue in the Gemara when, what period of time this applies, but there is actually, you have, first of all, there are, I believe Rabbeinu Yonah says that if you specifically tell him in the first place that you're going to be eating your own food, I think he says it's mutter, I'm not sure about that, though, but in any case, the Taz and the Shach also argue on the question, what if there's a problem of Eva? So the Taz says, okay, if there's a problem of Eva, if it's going to create anti-Semitism to decline, then you would be allowed to. The Shach says, absolutely, I may have the opinion. No, sorry. So you have the Taz and the Shach argue about this. I may have the opinions mixed up, but one of them says that if there's a problem of Eva, then fine. I think it's the Shach says that, actually. The Taz says, absolutely not. The fact is, we've seen the Pasuk is saying you have to stay away from them because to prevent intermarriage, but the context of the Pasuk. So Eva or not, the whole idea is you're supposed to be staying away from them. So the answer, the counter argument to that is that we're not necessarily talking about over here that there's you have obviously there can be a problem where it could lead to intermarriage, then of course it would be also no matter what, Ava or not. But here we're talking about a case where it's not like that, where you are going to be sitting separately or whatever. There's no problem of mingling. But so therefore you have maybe you have a heter because of Ava. The Shach and the Taz go back and forth on that.
So what?
The bottom line, I'll offer if you're in such a situation after all. Okay.
Can we derive that? We could derive it from Esther.
Hold on. There, actually, it's interesting that you mention that because the expression in the Gemara why the Jewish people were in trouble is Nenu Misudasa Shalosurasa, that they enjoyed. So some Mepharshim actually explain it means they ate his food. Other Mepharshim explain based on the Gemara that no, they ate their own food, but fine, the problem was that they had Hanah, that the Rebbe talks about in a number of Sichas, that they figured, oh, look at this, we've made it. We're now fully equal citizens of the empire, et cetera, et cetera. And that got them in trouble. As opposed to you going because you have no choice because of Ava or whatever, then that would be, if they had gone with that kind of mentality and they're eating their own food, we have no choice. We're subjects of Ahasuerus, but we should never think that this is our place, then that might not have been.
Some of us said because they came with the Samikash with it and they did.
That's another issue. That's another issue as well, yeah. Okay.
So it's another issue.
Right. Okay. Hilchoch, therefore, the Gemara says, during which period around the wedding does this apply? Kol tlosim yomim, during the 30 days after the wedding, bein omalei machmas hilulo vein loy, whether the guy who was inviting the yid says, I'm making this party as a post-wedding party, whether he says that or not, oster, then vein loy omalei machmas hilulo, or even if he doesn't say that explicitly, it's still oster, because we assume that it's meant as a follow-up to the wedding. And in halacha, by the way, you have a similar concept. Lahavdil, you have, the Gemara talks about in Ksubas, when it talks about the dinim of Sheva Brachas, technically, according to the original din, you could say that we know that by a Sheva Brachas, you say you add in when you're doing a mezuman, you add chasim chobim oinai. Technically, you could add like this. We only do it during Sheva Brachas. Technically, you could add it during the 30 days after, and even the Gemara is going to go on to say over here that there, in some cases, even 12 months, technically, you could do that also. In practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that nowadays, we're in Golos, we don't have such a level of Simcha, so therefore, you just do it during Sheva Brachas and during the 7 days, and that's it. But the same kinds of things we're talking about over here, 30 days and 12 months, the same concept exists, Lahavdil, as far as our weddings. Okay. Mikan ve'elach, after 30 days.
So when the Beit HaMikdash was...
When it was standing, then I guess...
Standing, that's what
yeah,
we have.
Yeah.
30 days.
Not necessarily, no. 7 days you had to do it. You had to have Shabbat. Huh. During the 30 days, if you're still making a post-wedding party, then you can still say Shastim Chol B'mayinah. Yeah. Okay. So Mikan ve'elach, after the 30 days, E omolei machmas yilula, if the guy says, I'm making this party as a post-wedding party, then it's also v'iloy omolei machmas yilula. If he doesn't say it's because of the wedding shori, then it's allowed, because then we can assume it's just Sam a dinner party. Okay.
What's the problem, Ava, in terms of...
No, never mind. Gemara's not dealing with the Ava angle of it. We're talking about that if it's after 30 days, we don't assume that it has to do with the wedding. To go to a guy's wedding is a problem because, again, of the problem of intermarriage. So after 30 days, we don't assume it's because of the wedding. Therefore, if he doesn't say it's because of the wedding, then you're allowed to go. Then it's just Sam a dinner party. If he explicitly says, I'm making this because 2 months ago my son got married and I'm still very happy about it, then it would be awesome.
Does it depend on who's going to be there? Mingling?
That's what, yeah. The Eloi Omolei Mach, okay, V'chi Omolei Mach Masilola Ademas. Okay, but you have to ask, and if the guy says he is doing it as a post-wedding thing, how far does that extend? I mean, so if he says 3 years later that he's making a post-wedding party, would the same din still apply? It has to end sometime.
Possibly.
No, Omer Papa Ad Shreitzu Yachei Shata. No, it only goes until 12 months. Once 12 months have passed, then you're allowed to. Once 12 months have passed, then you're allowed to go regardless.
What?
Right, I guess because like we have Shana Rishina, so they do also. I guess yeah. Okay. So okay, now we have to talk about pre-wedding parties. When does it become also to go to those? What's considered that it's now the wedding season? Once they put barley into the troughs, into the trays. So why are they putting barley in trays? Rashi gives two explanations. What? No, to offer it maybe, but Rashi doesn't bring either of those explanations. Rashi says what? Because then why daft the barley? One is that they used to offer all kinds of things.
Making beer.
Okay, so Rashi's first explanation is to make beer. Rashi's second explanation is that they would do it as a simen, as a simen toy. They would do it as they would put dirt into these trays. They'd plant barley in there shortly before the wedding. Then by the wedding, they would bring the plants that are already started to grow. They would bring growing plants in front of the chasen and kala and say, you should be fruitful and multiply like these plants that are growing. Because they use barley dafka because barley ripens very quickly. Okay, Tosfos says that we have to follow Rashi's second explanation. Tosfos says because in those days they didn't usually make beer out of barley. Throughout Shas, the typical material that they used for the typical material that they used for making beer out of was dates or other sweet fruits like that. Barley beer is something they did in medieval times. So So therefore, Tosfos says that the second lashon that they're doing it as a simon tov, as a fertility thing, is the better thing. Well, I mean, the technical is pruvu relevant to goyim. That you have, I think the shiultus says that it is, but the gemara on the face of it says that not the pruvu only applies to Jews. But nevertheless, you still have. I mean, the goyim still okay, so they don't have a technical mitzvah of pruvu. They still have that when a couple is getting married, they want to wish them good luck and many children, etc. You know,
What's the mitzvah? Moshevet
Yitzara, right? They have that the world shouldn't be depopulated, right? So they do have that, according to everybody. Yeah. Okay. So now the question is: so you're saying that after 12 months it's mutter, because after 12 months he's not making anything in honor of the wedding. So the question is: that so? You're telling me that after 12 months, no matter what, you're allowed to go to the goy's party? That it was in honor of last year's wedding.
Right.
It happened once that Rav Yitzchak Breder of Meshavshia one time visited the house of a certain guy, more than 12 months after the wedding. He heard the guy thanking his getchka at the party, and so Rav Yitzchak refrained and didn't eat. So we see even after 12 months. No, because the goy was saying, thank you, whatever, Getchka, that my son got married last year.
Right.
And therefore, we see, even after 12 months, it would be
awesome. It's almost the same as saying, you know,
just... It sounds like it's indefinite, in other words. So why are we saying before? Why are we saying before that after 12 months, it's mutter?
Because you told the goy...
No, so the answer is shiny, but fine. But then we just said that after 12 months, we're not worried about it. So if we're not worried, then it shouldn't even matter.
If we don't know, we're not worried. No.
The answer is Shiner Rav Yitzchak Breder Meshavshia to Adam Choshevu. The difference is that Rav Yitzchak Breder Meshavshia is an important person. So what does that mean? Rashi understands it to mean like this: because he was so important, therefore when he was willing to come as a guest, therefore the goy is extra happy about that. So a normal person, and a goy invites him to a party a year and a half, 2 years, whatever, after his child got married, no big deal. He's not going to be so happy. He's not going to be so excited about that. But they had a chosh of a guest like Rav Yitzchak Breder of Meshavshia, that he would, and therefore Rav Yitzchak Breder of Meshavshia, or anybody of that kind of importance, would be also to do it even after 12 months. A different understanding of it is Rav Yitzchak Breder of Meshavshia is an important person. He's a great Talmud Chacham. Other people are likely to learn from him. Therefore, he has to be extra careful with how he behaves, so people don't mistakenly think that you can go to such things.
So what happened then?
So that's it. He didn't eat. He didn't eat. What? No, so he didn't eat. He sat there with pastures, but he didn't eat.
And the problem is intermarriage going to these things.
So that's the basic question. I mean the pasuk is mentioning this v'karol l'chava halchem izivchoy in the context that the Gemara is mentioning it is context of that you're going to come to intermarry with the goyim. And you'll come and you'll eat from a sacrifice.
You're giving them, even if you don't eat, you're mere presence. You're giving them chashivas, and especially an adam chashiv is giving them chashivas. How can you be?
No, giving them chashivas in and of itself, giving them the individual goy chashivas is not necessarily an issue.
If he's going to his getchkes when...
That's the problem, if he's going to his getchkes, but that's what we're saying. For a normal person, even if he's going to his getchkes, fine, a goy is going to go to his getchkes various times. That's not because you're there. You being there doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. But Rav Yitzchak Breder of Meshavshia, the very fact that he accepted the invitation makes the goy happier and makes him... apparently not.
He stayed there and he didn't eat, I guess.
Yeah, means he withdrew and he didn't eat from the meal. Yeah. Bepashtos, it doesn't mean that he left. It probably just means that he sat there and didn't eat.
So would you write from this case that it's...
So again, we see that sometimes even after 12 months it will be. Sometimes even after 12 months it will be usur.
Sometimes it won't.
So sometimes it won't. It depends whether you're an autumn chashav or not. So, okay, here's what it is then. So, okay, as far as the Taz and the Shach that I was mentioning before. So the Taz says that given that the whole reason behind this thing is chasnus, so again, therefore, he says there's no heter because of Ava, because the whole point is Ava is that a goy is not going to want to get along with you. Well, very well, that's what chasnus is all about, that you shouldn't come to socialize too much with goyim and come to intermarry with them. The Shach learns that the Shach, and this is actually, it's not an original machlokes to them. The Drisha, from the Smeh, is the first one who mentions this concept that maybe Ava makes it allowed. So the Shach defends the Drisha and says, Because it's not like you, Taz, are saying it's a problem of intermarriage. The problem is lo yishama al picha. The problem is what we were discussing before. You don't want that because of you. A goy is praising his getchka. Well, then, the same way as we said before about doing business with him before or on his holiday, that Ava can be a valid reason to override that. So fine, Ava can be a valid reason to override this as well. Practically speaking, I mean, we have the Taz versus the Shach. Again, as usual, there's no higher authority. So if you have such a situation where an Oved Avodah Zarah is inviting you to a wedding party, then ask the Shaila what you should do. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said the next holiday the Mishnah mentioned is the Kartesim, Vechola. My Kartesim, what is that? Kartesim, however it's pronounced, whatever. What is it? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Yom Shetopsa by Romi Malchus. That is the day when Rome seized empire. In other words, when they became a world empire. Okay, the question is, Valtanya Kartesim, Yom Shetopsa by Romi Malchus. We learn in a Braisa that there's Kartesim, and then there's also the day when the Romans became an empire, which implies that Kartesim is a different thing. Amar of Yosef, Shtei Tfisis Topsa Romi. So Rabbi Yosef answers, because the Romans actually seized empire twice. There were two major stages in them becoming the world power that they were. Achas be made clafter to Malchusa, one in the time of Queen Cleopatra. But Pastus, that means the famous one from Egypt, when they conquered her just about 100 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, then that's the one that we're talking about. But Achas shetops be made Yevonim. And then there was a previous one where they had fought together where they had fought against the Greeks and defeated them. So therefore, so one of them is called Tricasim and the other one is called Yom Shetopsa by Romi Malchus. One of them is it started becoming a world empire, and the other one is it became the only power in that part of the world.
It's just interesting because according to that, it's saying them backwards. It's going back in time.
Could be. Okay. Yeah, because Kartesim is like the big one, because once they defeated Cleopatra, then that's it. They have no more rivals in that area. No, Kartesim then, according to that, would be different people talk about that might come from a Greek word that means something like victory or taking over or something like that, whatever. So whatever it is. So then Kartesim would be the second one, yeah, they became an unopposed power at that point around the Mediterranean. And then previously, there's another one that they had left their celebration, which is maybe why our Mishnah doesn't mention it, previously when they defeated the Greeks and started their rise to becoming a world power. So what actually happened over there? The also of Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he told us, here's how it happened. Tlosin Retrain Krovi of the Roimoi Bahadi Yavanoi, the Romans fought 32 battles against the Greeks, Velo Yochlulu, and they were never able to conquer them. So this is, by the way, when we talk about the Greeks, it's a little bit hard to tell which. I mean, the Cleopatra's kingdom, Egypt, was actually one of the last ones left over from Alexander the Great's conquest. We know he conquered almost the whole known world from Greece eastward. After he died, as it says in the Pesukim in Daniel, his empire broke up into four major kingdoms and a bunch of smaller ones. Most of those eventually were taken over by the Romans. Egypt was the last one of them they did. So with Yevonim we're talking about beforehand, it could be any of these. Could be the one based in Greece. Could be the one based in Syria. Could be whatever. There were a bunch of little Greek kingdoms around there. Anyway, so 32 battles they fought against them. Velo yachlulu, and they were never able to defeat them.
Who fought against
them? The Romans and the Greeks fought. Ad shatfinu li Yisrael ba'adayu, until the Romans joined forces together with the Jews. This is talking about during the period when the Jews were fighting against the Greeks in the period before and during and after the Nes Chanukah. So the Romans made the following deal together with the Jews. If at any given point in time we're going to be producing the kings or the highest power, then you will provide the hifrachi, the governors. And there will be times when you'll provide the kings and we'll provide the governors. In other words, we'll share power equally. Each of us will have our turn at the highest level of government, and each one will have a turn at the lesser levels. So now that they have the Jews on their side, the Shochol Roimoi Livanoi. So now the Romans send the Greeks the following message. Ad ho'idna, now it's enough fighting. Ad ho'idna avidna b'krova. Up till this point, we've tried to accomplish it through war, and we haven't gotten anywhere. We're at a stalemate. Hashta, now the bedina. Now let's sit down and start having peace talks. Let's figure this out logically. Let's say you have like this. Margolis v'eventoiva. If you have a margolis, which is a pearl, And then you have a precious stone, where the precious stone is worth more than the pearl. Ezemahen, yes, you also bought this lachaberi. Which one should be the base for the other one? Which one should you use as the setting, and which one should you use for the centerpiece? Sholchulahu, so the Greeks send back, Magolos Levin Toiva. Obviously, the pearl is worth less, so use it as the base. And use it as a base, and use the Evan Tova as the centerpiece. Okay, how about Evan Tova of Enoch? What about if you have a regular precious stone, and then you have an Enoch, Rashi translates it as something called a carbuncle, which is a black stone. The Aruch translates it as onyx, which is also a black stone. Yeah, so whatever. It's some kind of black stone, but apparently it's more precious than a regular run-of-the-mill diamond or what have you. So which one becomes the base and which one becomes the centerpiece? Ezeman Yosabos Zachaber, and the Greeks answer Evan Tovala Enoch. In that case, then the jewel is less important than the Enoch, so the jewel will be the setting, will be the base, and the Enoch will be the centerpiece. What about Enoch versus Sefer Torah? Ezeman Yosabos Zachaber. What about if you have an Enoch versus a Sefer Torah? Which one is the more important and which one is the less important? And they answer Enoch versus Sefer Torah. These are the Greeks who are fighting against the Jews. They still recognize the greatness of the Torah. They still understood how they didn't agree with it. They tried to fight against it. They tried to suppress it, whatever. But they still respected it. So sholchulahu. So therefore, so now the Romans send a message back to the Greeks. Imkein anan sefer Torah gabon v'Yisrael badon. Okay, in that case, then we now have the sefer Torah on our side because we have the Jews on our side. And therefore, that's it. You have to, according to your own logic, you have to give up. Kofaluhu, and sure enough, they subjugated them on that basis. But we're talking about over here after the Jews in Eretz Yisrael had finished getting rid of the Greeks and kicking them out of Eretz Yisrael. Now the Romans are coming into play. In fact, actually, by the way, I mean in Sefer Chashmonaim, which is the books that tell the story of Hanukkah. They're not part of Tanakh, although some of the Goyim consider them to be part of their Bible, whatever. It tells how at one point, while Yehuda and his brothers are fighting against the Greeks, at one point they made an alliance with the Romans in order to help them out against the Greeks. Yeah, so that reflects what we're saying over here in our Gemara, that they made an official alliance. I mean, it's also possible, I don't know really. I mean, is our Gemara telling us literally what happened between ambassadors of the Romans and the Greeks down here on earth, or are we maybe talking about a discussion that took place between their Sarim in Shemayim, and once the Sar in Shemayim gives in, then of course automatically I'm here on earth, then it happens the same way. Okay. Anyway. So what ended up happening? For the next 26 years, the Romans kept their end of the bargain with the Jewish people, and then didn't lord it over them. Shneh corresponds to the name of Hashem. In fact, the Maharal says that because they only conquered in the course of the Torah, which has Hashem's name in it. Therefore, for 26 years, they kept their end of the deal. Later on, after those 26 years were over, they started subjugating the Jewish people. They broke their end of the deal. And the Gemara is going to explain soon how we know that it was 26 years. So first, Me'ikra my Dorosh, or we'll say my Dorosh. What were the Romans thinking when they decided to, for those 26 years, to be loyal to the Jews? And what were they thinking afterwards? What made them change their mind? Now we know the Romans are descended from Esav. The Chazal tell us all over the place. So therefore, they understood that it should be like the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Me'ikra Dorosh Nisav and Elecha Ve'elchal Negdecha. Originally, they focused on, you have the pasuk that Esav says to Yaakov after their meeting over there. Let's travel along. Let's go, and I'll go corresponding to you. In other words, Esav offers to go at Yaakov's pace, and Yaakov turns him down. And all the slaves, daughters, Yavon Adonai, this and Abdi. Then they realize, hey, but you know what? Look at that. Yaakov himself said, "You pass on ahead, and I'll follow at my own pace." So therefore, they were able to use that. Okay, well, in that case, your ancestor Yaakov himself said that he doesn't want to be side by side with us. That you will go on ahead, and he'll be behind. So therefore, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be the ones ahead, and you guys can be lagging behind. Okay, so we'll learn tomorrow. The Gemara will talk about where we find how we know historically that you have this 26-year period. Tomorrow we're gonna get into a lot of interesting things involving the chronology, the history of the Second Mishnah and the period before and after.
Roman invasion or almost.
So I'll tell you. I mean, the Gemara is gonna tell us tomorrow that the Romans took over in Eretz Yisrael 180 years before the Korban.
But how long after the Greeks?
This is 180 years before the Korban would be the, well, that's what we're saying, 26 years after the Greeks, after 26 years after they're rid of the Greeks. Historically, I mean, if you look, for example, in Josephus' histories and whatever, you find the Romans took over in Eretz Yisrael about 130 years before the Korban. So not 180, like our Gemara is saying. So it could be, and in the Sama, there were different stages in it. 130 years, they completely took over, and that's it. That's during the period of the later Hashmonaim. Apparently, the idea is, the Hashmonaim started right after so 260 years before the Korban. The Gemara is going to talk about 206. So that's the thing.
No,
everybody agrees with that. Yeah.
Minus 20.
So therefore, minus 26 gives you 180. That's what the Gemara is going to say. But what it is is that Josephus, for example, has, you know, that according to him, apparently the Hashmonaim had a considerably long period of independence. According to our Gemara, according to him, they had around 70 years or so of independence. And in fact, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions 70 years of the Hashmonaim that might reflect that. Our Gemara, when it mentions that the Romans took over 180 years before the Korban, which that the beginning of that 180 years is smack in the middle of those 70 years, the Stama, what it is the Gemara is saying there was some period when the Romans started being more aggressive in their relations with the Jewish people than they had been before. Maybe it wasn't like a total takeover, but maybe the 180 years the Gemara is talking about over here, maybe it was like, for example, I don't know, let's say the relationship between America and Israel, for example, where America hasn't taken over Israel, but on the other hand, you know, they kind of make it clear who's boss, sort of. So it could have been something like that. Right. So we'll continue tomorrow with the details. Any questions there, Lisa? I guess not. Good night.